What is that power that, you know, we use to create, to co-create with Spirit, the kinds of personal life experiences we really want to have? It's the power of imagination, right? It's the same power that we use to step into the vision that we hold for our world, for the universe. And that's what we're talking about all along this journey, this path of the Holy Fool. We can use our imagination to co-create anything we dream about. And whether it is for our personal lives or for the world itself, it all weaves together, as I hope I will prove to you today. So some of you maybe would recognize this photo. Maybe most of you have seen it before. This is Earthrise by William Anders, an astronaut that was on Apollo 8 in 1968. And as the astronauts were circumventing the moon, suddenly they looked over and saw that beautiful picture of the Earth from that perspective and brought it back to us so we too could, there's our home, right? So beautiful, just suspended there in space. It was Christmas Eve when he took that. And because it was the perspective from the moon, it gave us a whole different feel for our precious planet. In Life's 100 Photographs That Changed the World, this Earthrise photo was hailed as the most influential environmental photo that had been taken. And 50 years afterwards, Bill Anders, the astronaut who snapped it, said, "We set out to explore the moon, and we discovered the Earth instead." Dan Rather wrote in his book, What Unites Us, "All that separates us ethnically, culturally, politically, and spiritually is completely absent from that image. What we see is one fragile planet making its way across the vastness of space." It's not so much the image itself that captivates us, though. It's what it evokes in us, right? As we observe that, as we feel into that image, it is the beauty and the preciousness and the gift that we have been given to live on this gorgeous blue planet. And it's that deep desire that gets stirred in us when we have that feeling of awe and beauty, that to care for it, right? To care for our home, to have our home for many, many decades and centuries to come. Earthrise is not just a photo, it's a vision for a new Earth. And moving our inspiration into action is what's encapsulated by the four cornerstones of Earthrise that Lauren Artress talks about in this book we're studying in small groups and throughout this fall series called The Path of the Holy Fool. The first is personal accountability. It's that sense that what I choose to do and how I act matters. It has an impact, or my inaction and choice to not act has an impact as well. And the second cornerstone is that social and economic justice is so key, right? For us to rise up as an Earth, as a planet, as a people, to continue to live and evolve spiritually and otherwise. So that is a sense that everyone matters, right? That we are all equal, that we all deserve dignity, that we all deserve kindness and equality and justice. But let's take a look at the other two cornerstones, the final two cornerstones of Earthrise. The third one is ecological consciousness, and the fourth is community participation. So ecological consciousness is that remembrance of our oneness, that knowing that we are one with God and we are one with all life, that we are one with, from down to the tiniest little flowers and insects and beyond that. Remember when Chief Philip was with us and he told us the coronavirus is one of our ancestors. And it's believed in indigenous cultures and Native American particularly that our ancestors are wiser than us, right? They care because they're older than us, they've been around longer, they carry a wisdom for us. So to think about the coronavirus in that way, that we're constantly battling and pushing it away and resisting it, but to think of it as, our ancestor has come to teach us something, to show us something, to remind us of who we are, to wake us up, to create Earthrise together. That's a complete shift, isn't it? That's something you won't hear about on the news, by the way. Probably. I don't know. Let's hold a vision. Maybe you will. Right? While we're visioning. So this idea then is this community participation, this fourth cornerstone, is building empathy for each other. It's building empathy for our world, for the connection through all beings and all humans and all life. It's a sense of understanding that even those who are different from us are a part of us, that we are all family. And then when we see ourselves as one family of life, when we see ourselves from that perspective, as Dan Rather wrote about in What Unites Us, we see that little blue planet floating out in space. We go, ah, our precious home. And there's a sense of uniting, togetherness, love, connection, right? Everything falls away that is other than that, and that is otherizing with that. There's so much we can learn from the animal kingdom on our planet. You've probably seen those photos of how cross species come together and take care of each other. There's a whole website of it called The Bright Side that's really fun with little stories and images among many that are out there on the web. And so I pulled this one from The Bright Side. It is about the monkey Niv and his chicken friend. And I don't know what the chicken's name is, but Niv lives in an Israeli zoo, and he didn't have companions of his own type, so he was looking for a friend, and he found a chicken in a neighboring cage who came over to visit, and they became fast friends. And so Niv coddles and cuddles the chicken, and when the chicken is scared, he runs right to Niv, and then they just sort of, you know, sit together. And sometimes the chicken even spends the night so they can just sort of cuddle through the night. So it's one of the many, you know, of those species, cross-species kinds of love and connection and care that teaches us, right, as humans, to teaches us that those who are different from us, whether they be insects or humans, are to be loved and honored and have dignity and be a part of this whole beautiful creation that we are. So what about wild animals and people and that connection between wild animals and people? I know a woman who used her imagination in a way that none of us might have to see herself across the world in some different configuration of connection. Her name is Kat Hill, and she's here to share her story today with us. Cat and cat.
Thank you, Kristen. Good morning, everybody. I want to share how I was able to use my power of imagination to have an epic adventure and fulfill a dream that I didn't even know existed. So this is my story of how I spooned a cheetah. It all began, I love it. That will be the title of the book, by the way. It all began in October of 2014 when the landlord of my apartment told me he was putting the building up for sale. I loved this apartment. I was raising my sons there. It was incredibly under market rent, too. So my first thought was, what if the new landlord raises the rent so high I can't afford to live here anymore? What would I do? Well, those two little words, what if, set my imagination into motion, and I've used them many times since. So I call it the what-if game now, and there are only two rules to the what-if game. There are no I can'ts, I don'ts, or negativity of the question. And the second rule is there is no wrong or stupid idea. All ideas are up for contemplation. So I asked myself, what if I wanted to become an astronaut? What would that look like? Well, I'd have to go back to school, get a PhD in astrophysics, and yeah, that's not going to happen. So what if I wanted to open a cat rescue in the Anderson Valley? What would that look like? I asked myself a lot of what-if questions, but this was the question that started my epic adventure and changed my life. What if I wanted to live overseas? What would that look like? Well, I could teach English abroad. That's a good idea. I could join the Peace Corps. Oh, I could join the Peace Corps. Well, thanks to our good friend Google and spending a few hours with Google, I realized that there was a job fair where the Peace Corps was being featured. It was a mile from where I worked during my lunch hour, and I basically had unlimited lunch hour time. So I went to the venue, and I went directly to the Peace Corps table, and I walked up and I said, "Do you accept old people like me?" Because I was 51 at the time. "Well, of course, we love our mature volunteers." "Do you have a degree?" asked the 12-year-old behind the table. And I said, "Yeah, I have a degree from UC Berkeley in anthropology. Is that okay?" She's like, "Let's talk about you applying." So the application process was cumbersome and arduous. The red tape was longer than a roll of toilet paper. And there were many, many times when I thought of quitting. But I was finally accepted as a primary school teacher in the country of Lesotho. Who here has ever heard of Lesotho? Okay, Danae and Carl, because you've heard this story before. So I'd never heard of it, so I had to have a time with my good friend Google, and it's in Southern Africa. It's a landlocked country within the country of South Africa, and it is a kingdom. So as I'm contemplating this, I go, but wait, I didn't apply to be a teacher, and I didn't apply to go to Southern Africa. My first choice was to go to Macedonia. My second choice was to go to Morocco and work with youth and development. But my third choice, I'll go anywhere and do anything. So I went to Lesotho. I was to leave October 4th, 2015, 2 days after my 52nd birthday. And guess what? During this whole year-long process, not a word was mentioned about the sale of the apartment building. It finally sold the end of September of that year, 3 days before I was supposed to go. Talk about divine guidance. And by the way, the rent went from $1,400 to $2,450. So fast forward a year later, through a wonderful, hard, beautiful, heartbreaking year, where I lived in a mud and donkey dung hut with no electricity, no running water, and definitely no plumbing. And it was time for me to come stateside. So y'all know my name is Kat, and that's just a nickname. I've always been a cat lover, and I feel like I was born with a cat in my arms, but I never thought it was possible to ever see a live cat outside of a zoo, let alone touch one. So prior to returning to the States, I spent a few days volunteering for a cheetah rescue in South Africa. They had lions, a tiger, jaguars, servals, caracals, and of course, cheetahs. On my first day there, I got to be in an enclosure with this beautiful lady up here. Her name is Legacy. And I actually got to pet her, which kind of blew my mind. Legacy had been rescued from the pet-a-cub trade that keeps cats very drugged up so they can't hurt tourists who come wanting a selfie. So please do not ever, ever support those organizations. The incredible amount of drugs in her system caused neurological damage, and she needed to be watched on a 24-hour basis. So I was slightly overcome with gratitude for this opportunity. On my last night there, after days of walking the security fences, processing chickens to feed the cats, and playing soccer with the cheetahs, who just don't get soccer, and sitting in awe of the white lion, I was asked if I wanted to sleep with Legacy that night, and I replied, "Oh, heck yeah." I knew that this was a divinely guided experience and that I would be safe from harm, although I was still slightly terrified. So that night, after about a year after playing the what if game, I spooned a cheetah. I can still feel the weight of Legacy cuddled against my body and the sound of, I'm sorry. Every time this, it's still so real. I can still feel the weight of Legacy cuddled against my body and the sound of her powerful yet comforting purr every time I would reach out and stroke her. And this amazing experience all started with two little but mighty words, "What if?"
Wow. I've heard that story, I don't know, three, now four times. Yeah, and it just, beautiful. I see why you cry every time you tell it. So beautiful. And that what if game that you have given us, we will return to, because that is also very powerful. Thank you for sharing, Kat. So there is this web of interconnected life that we just experienced, very visceral, and it's that web is held together by spirit, right? The truth of spirit holds it together. The glue of the universal love of God holds it together. And yet, we have been given the free will, right, on earth. And so we can participate in that and buoy that up and align with it. And sometimes we can kind of mess it up, right? We can sort of break that web down by our ignorance. If a spider doesn't pay attention to her web, the dreams and desires that she wishes to catch there won't come, because a wind can blow or something can come along and the web can break, right? So she has to pay attention to the places where it is broken so it can be repaired. So we also have to look there. We can't just skip over that part and say we're going to create Earthrise if we don't know where we're working to repair the web, to come back into that interconnection, which is our natural state of being. That web of life is the natural state of being. So it's our work to look at where has the web come loose? Where has it broken? Where is it just wafting in the wind, so we can strengthen it once again? So that is our spiritual work to look. When we think about when Christianity was more formalized and when the Western civilization was more established, there were many, many gifts that came from that, right? But there were also some things that were taken away that cause a miss, right? We're missing something. There's a piece of the puzzle that is missing. There were things that were tossed out that were part of our wholeness. A reasoning mind was made elevated, right? That was made king. Imagination was tossed to the realm of the fool. We are reclaiming it through this series, The Holy Fool, right? The idea of imagination. The sensory experience, even the body itself, was considered sinful. And so even our very, you know, being that we're carrying our soul in was considered sinful by design. Somehow that just doesn't add up, does it, to the loving God, to the creation that we imagine to be. As women were oppressed, so too was the feminine in all of us. So all of us suffer, male and female, from that repression of feminine traits. And greed and false belief in superiority ramped up the domination of nature. People with dark skin were considered inferior, and that was a created myth for economic gain out of that greed. And the earth and all of her creatures have suffered greatly because of this rift, this idea in the human consciousness of separation. So our work is to help mend it, right? Help weave back together that web of interconnected life. There's good news, too, because we've made a lot of progress. You know, 300 years ago, if a woman like Kat, the story that Kat just told, imagined herself across the ocean, reimagined a life for herself, and then came into intimate, close connection with a cat, she would have been considered a witch, as if that were a bad thing. See how far we've come. Reclaiming the web is putting ourselves back together into our wholeness. It's reclaiming the pieces of our soul that have been lost over time for reasons that we don't need to know or to even explain at this point, just to see and to know our work to be done together, our spiritual work to be done together. So we are regaining our wholeness in this process, and we are regaining the access points to spirit that may have been shut down by the things that we have lost over the years. What we come back into then is a sort of balance and honor of, yes, reason. We still keep reason and intellect. This isn't about replacing one thing for another. It's about bringing it all back into harmony. And so we bring with reason and intellect, imagination, sensation, these things, all part of our wholeness, of our humanity and our divinity. Years ago, I took a couple of groups to Peru, and our guide was Jorge Luis Delgado, who in our terms would be a shaman, but he never took on that term. He used a shakaruna, which is like a bridge maker, a bridge builder. But either way, he's a very spiritual man who was a wonderful guide for us. And one day we were sitting at a sacred site, and I saw this huge spider walking across the middle of the center of the site itself. And I said something about it. And he looked at me, you know how sometimes we look at each other like that really deep knowing look, like deep into the eyes, into the soul. And he said, "You are the weaver." And I wanted to really receive that. I wanted to really claim that. But I didn't know enough. I mean, the spider walks by and then he looks at me and says, "You are the weaver." Well, who is the spider? I don't really even know who the spider is, right? What we see is big, scary spiders hanging in people's front yards at Halloween, right? And we think of them as creepy and horrible. But, you know, as you begin to look at the creation, the wonder begins to open up. You know, the shape of a spider's body is in the shape of infinity. Interesting, isn't it? And many, many cultures and groups across time have upheld the importance of the spider. So groups like the Egyptians and the Celtics, the Greeks, the Diné Navajo, close to home, among them. The Mayans, some of them called Earth Goddess Spider Woman. And to the Cherokee, there is a story that reveals that spider is the only animal that had the courage to crawl across her web to the other side and to bring the sun in a clay pot on her web back to the people so that they could have light and warmth. To some, grandmother spider is the one who created the universe itself. And in Jewish and Muslim stories, in both a story about Muhammad and a story about King David, they're being chased by their enemies and they come to a cave and they ask Spider if she will weave a web over the mouth of the cave. And it tricks the enemy. When the enemy comes and they see that there's a web there that has not been broken, they wouldn't imagine that the guys are hiding in there. And so the spider is this form of protection as well. Archaeologists say that the spider's web is what motivated us humans to make fishing nets and to weave fabric. Having inhabited the earth for more than 300 million years, spider is revealed for her ancient wisdom that she carries in her DNA. Does it change your view at all about spider? Once I understood these things, I revered the life of the spider more. I committed to my catch and release process at home. But more than that, I wanted to become more like spider, more like the weaver that Jorge had called forth. Don't you? Don't you want to be a weaver that contributes to the web of reconnecting life for this precious planet? We can do this. And every good weaver knows what she's creating before she begins, or he begins, or they begin. The traits of that we are creating as a weaver are bigger than that. Let's take a look at some of the traits that are a part of claiming this. The grandmother spider, the grandmother who is weaving the universe, is a manifester, a balancer, a weaver, an artist. She has infinite patience and ancient wisdom. And so when we step into and own this idea that we too are weavers of the interconnected web of life, we begin to own these traits as well. We are manifestors. We know this in our unity teachings. We are artists and weavers. We are balancers. We are patient. We are wise. So what if we return then to Kat's what if game? And if you dreamed about your life in this understanding that you are co-creating and weaving in a whole different way, if you dreamed about your life and you wove it, you would catch the initial vision like a weaver, right? If you were to weave something, a fabric with a picture on it, the weaver first catches a vision of what they want to make. They have an idea of where they're headed. But they don't have to have all the detail down, right? There's a divine pattern there. And so as they weave, the divine pattern starts to come together. The specifics, the color, the images comes together to form a pattern that is even a bit of a surprise to the weaver themselves. Just like there were surprises as we were co-creating our wedding experience. And there are always delightful surprises for us along the way. We can allow them, we can embrace them as delightful surprises. It's all in how we weave, right? How we create, how we meet the things that come, the challenges that come, as well as the joys. And what if we opened up our weaving to the wider world and saw that our place in it is bigger than weaving just our individual lives, which is a really important part of it, but that it is all interconnected. And so when we weave a part of our individual life, we are weaving a part of the larger fabric of humanity and all life. Or we can very consciously decide that we're going to be a part of the weaving of the worldwide web of spiritual intent, what it is that we want to bring forth together. That desire and that dream that we hold for the world becomes then a commitment. It becomes something where we take up our own hands and our own hearts and our own eyes and contribute them to the greater good. It's easy to see our part in weaving our own life. It's not so easy to see when we widen it up to the collective. A lot of times it's easy, in fact, for us to say, somebody else will do that. It's not mine to do. Or somehow we don't think we have the skill or the talent or the time or the ability or the energy or the money or all those things that we like to trounce out, right? All those limitations and ways we can't. But this is about what we can. This is about what we're called to do. This is what we're asked to do. We are all asked to be weavers of this new world, this new earth that is asking for us to weave it. And what if you are supposed to be the first weaver? What if you're one of those, maybe like a firstborn, that's supposed to create the first stitch so that the rest of the new earth can be woven? What if you're an initiator? Or what if you're supposed to do the middle part where it continues and you're supposed to be the one who continues the process? Or what if you're the one who's supposed to complete it? You're the one who's supposed to follow through. And what if you don't? What if you don't? Does it stop? Maybe. So what is ours to do? What is our brave self going to allow us to participate in? We are at that time. It is so fragile and precious, this time that we're in. And we each have a role to play. We each are being called forth as a weaver. None is too old or too young or too anything. All the things that we might say and object to and limit ourselves, it has no bearing anymore. It's like Dan Rather said, it's what unites us. All that stuff falls away, the national boundaries, the cities, all that we make up, the stuff that we make up, it doesn't matter, right? When we have that vision and we say, that precious planet, it's in my hands too. I am a co-creator. I am a weaver. I am being asked to contribute. I am being asked to show up. I am being asked to do something to help Earthrise happen. That's what we're up against. Not even up against, that's the wrong word. That's the gift we're being offered. That's, you know, who doesn't long for a life that has meaning and impact? Who doesn't want to make a difference? Anybody in this room? I know you don't come to Unity. You want to make a difference, Mario. You're making a difference every moment you're breathing. So let's reclaim our part in this. You know, as we weave, in some places it will be fragile, In other places, it will be strong. In some places, it will be a beautiful geometric web. Have you ever come across one of those? It's just like, admire the handiwork. It's like, wow, that is perfectly, you know, or you come across one that's pretty asymmetrical, right? And there will be those places for us as we weave. There will be those places where an unsuspecting human walks right through our handiwork, right? Or the winds of life blow. And we have to either repair or start over completely. Well, lucky for us, some of the virtues of the weaver are patience and acceptance, as well as this ancient wisdom that we are a part of. Your web will catch the divine light. Your web will help catch dreams and desires, your own and all of ours collectively. In this worldwide web that we are weaving, and we who are weaving it, who are caring for all that have been part of us, that we see these beautiful animals, these cheetahs and spiders and others that we have called forth today, the animals, the plant kingdom, all of it, we are called Homo sapiens for a reason. Wise beings. And now is our time to really step up into that calling. Wise beings, weavers. Our DNA has it too, and we can weave this wholeness, but we have to do it together. Buckminster Fuller was known as a futurist or visionary. He did many things. He was an inventor. And he said this: we're not going to be able to operate our spaceship Earth successfully, nor for much longer, unless we see it as a whole spaceship and our fate as common. It has to be everybody or nobody. So let's do our weaving part for Earthrise, shall we? Let's reclaim the web of interconnected life. I invite you to say this with me. Together, I am a weaver, reclaiming the web of interconnected life. And so it is.